time for Coffee with the Chicken Ladies, a podcast for people who love chickens.
Hey, everybody, and welcome. It's Chrissy and Holly from Coffee with the Chicken Ladies. We're here, and this is episode number 156 of our podcast, where we talk about everything chicken, family, fun, and
more chickens.
More chickens. We drink a ton of coffee. I'm talking a ton. But most importantly,
we hug chickens every day.
And we kiss them too. Don't forget. We brew coffee from a little coffee house in historic Gettysburg, PA. Bantam Coffee Roasters. Holly Ann, what kind of coffee are we brewing today?
Today we're drinking the Mexican with notes of sweet, juicy fruit.
And cocoa.
It's delicious.
It's so good. And we want to mention this code, Fluffy Butt, over at Bantam Coffee Roasters.
That gets you 10% off of anything on the entire website.
So where should they go?
BantamRoasters.com.
And follow them on Facebook and Instagram. Are you ready to sip some of this delicious Mexican coffee and chat?
I am, but first, a word from our sponsor.
We have some exciting news to share from our sponsor, Grubly Farms. They're here, new and improved, Grubly's World Harvest.
I'm a longtime subscriber, and my flock love the healthy, nutritious treats, plus orders $40 and more ship free.
If you haven't heard, Grubly's has a fantastic layer pellet and crumble feed. It's packed with plant and insect protein, perfect for those picky chickens and ducks.
Grubly Farms makes food and treats for healthy pets and planet.
To support us and Grubly's, go to our website or our show notes and use the link. Try it today.
How are you doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
Tired.
We're too old for these wild road trips.
I mean, we're back.
We're back in one piece.
We had such a good time. And yeah, it was a great weekend. It was great to meet our listeners out there.
Oh, that was so much fun. Yeah, it was really, really good to see everybody. Chat with some really interesting people at the show.
Oh, definitely. We had a great time seeing all the breeds in person. And Columbus is such a quaint little city.
I loved Columbus. I loved the restaurants that we found. I loved the antiquing and thrifting.
The largest antique mall in Ohio.
That was not right in Columbus. That was outside of Columbus. And you could have spent a week in there and
still not seen it all.
Everything. Yeah.
It was so much fun. I mean, I don't think we've done that much antiquing in forever.
Oh, yeah. No, that was a lot of antiquing.
It was like a marathon of antiquing.
I enjoyed every minute of it.
It was so much fun and just tons of memories we made. And we road tripped it. So it was almost 7 hours each way. But there is a dead zone, 2.5 hours.
Yes.
From outside of Columbus to, what was that city? Clarksburg,
West Virginia.
Nothing. There's nothing. No. And when you're starving, everything is like, oh, come on.
We could have at least stopped and get drinks, but somebody thought we should proceed and we would find some other place to get some drinks.
No, we ended up at Qdoba in Clarksburg.
You got to eat where you got to eat, man.
And it's in a tricky parking lot. That's all I'm going to say.
I will also say that the car came home considerably stuffed full of stuff. None of it was live poultry, but there was a lot of stuff that came home.
Joe came out to help us. He was like, do you guys need help? I thought you just had your bags.
Nope. Bags and boxes. And
there was the one antique plate, the big one, the very last one. I mean, we drove up on that one and it took us 5 minutes of driving down to then turn around and go back.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was where I swung the wild U-turn in the no U-turn spot. It's like, there are antiques to be had, excuse me.
And we did find a thrift store in the middle of nowhere that has 70% sale.
Yes, we did. You spotted that one. That was all you.
And I have to say, I got the deal of a century on a beautiful red wool coat from Macy's in petite, so it's not too long on me, for $1.60.
But what else did you get in there?
I got a chicken with the eggs.
You got a ceramic chicken.
That had no eggs. And I got garland.
Oh, you did get that cute garland, yeah.
For 90 cents.
I got some fabric bits for crafting. Some really nice fabric for crafting for like $1. And then I got a single porcelain goose napkin ring for 64 cents.
That coat was the deal of a century.
Okay, I like my napkin ring.
$1.60?
Yeah, I hear ya.
$1.60.
I know. I mean,
it was $5 with 70% off.
You're sounding a little competitive. I think that competitive thrifting was a little bit of the theme this weekend. I mean,
Columbus Goodwill.
The first Goodwill we ran into was practically a rugby scrum. And I will admit, I was right in the middle of it.
I went to the wood section, which you did not go to the wood section because you don't think there's a lot of stuff in the wood section. But there were four wood Williams Sonoma placemats with white face black Spanish chickens on them. Non-price, so I asked the little man to give us a price. $3.99. Oh, yeah.
Are you finished? If you gloat anymore, you're going to melt down the mics.
We had a blast. We had everybody in Goodwill cracking up. They were laughing with us.
Well, it was wrong.
It was wrong. It was also right.
Well, the other little Miss Smug comes around the corner and she has one half of a set of salt and pepper shakers. It's a turkey hen. And I sprinted right back around the corner.
You're like, there's got to be another one.
And I found that Tom, didn't I? I found that Tom.
Now, they will be both in the studio, so we couldn't separate them.
I thought about whether or not I wanted to bring them back over. But the truth is that I found myself a set on eBay and ordered them.
Well, so that's what happens when you go to Goodwill after dinner, after you have some hard cider, creamsicle hard cider.
There was some hard cider involved.
And then you go to Goodwill.
And competitive thrifting is, I mean, it's a thing.
And our legs hurt so bad that when we went in there, you were even joking around. You're like, this isn't going to be pretty. But you never go to the wood. You don't go to the wood side.
I go to the wood when you're not around.
I went to the wood first. I was like, let's just see. And I scored.
Good for you.
The only thing that would have been better was if there were some pullet eggs in there.
The other place. Now, I was looking for turkeys all weekend. I was looking for turkeys. I don't think you started off looking for turkeys.
I wasn't looking for turkeys.
Well, that last antique shop that we were in, you took off. And you come back around the corner with a stinking turkey. And I'm like, I've been looking for turkeys, and you get the one turkey that's in here.
For $5.
Seriously, what is wrong with this picture?
It's so much fun thrifting and antiquing together.
Next time, all bets are off. I am running you over. You are going down hard.
So much fun. Don't you all want to come thrifting and antiquing with us?
She gets the one turkey in there, and then I discover that there's this whole row of turkey salt and pepper shakers 10 feet up on a ledge. Like, it's 10 minutes before close, and I can't get to these turkeys.
Oh, the guy had to finish a cigarette before he could come back. And then we zoomed out of there and looked for food, and that started our two and a half hours later. So, yes, we're back. We had a great time thrifting, seeing chickens.
So many chickens.
And
so
what
many
we're going to talk about during our main topic was truly amazing.
It was one of the highlights of the weekend, really.
It was, but we won't talk about it now. We won't spoil it.
You know, another highlight was Christine Heinrichs.
Yeah.
We were early enough that we got one of the copies of the 150th anniversary history of the APA book that she had written. And Christine is delightful.
Hopefully she's going to come on the show soon.
I think she will be.
On that note, if you're listening to our show and you're loving it, head on over to Apple Podcast and leave us a written review. It does amazing things for the growth of our show. You never miss an episode, and it really does help us grow.
If you're looking for other ways to help support the podcast, you can share your favorite episodes on social media. You can tell some chicken-loving friends about the podcast. You can check out our Etsy shop. We have t-shirts, we have mugs, we have tiny chickens. You can become a patron of the show, patreon.com/coffeewiththechickenladies. We have 3 levels of membership. And the other thing you can do to help support the podcast is use our affiliate links and discount codes and buy products from our sponsors.
Yay!
Hey, Chris.
Yeah?
Do you like subscription boxes?
Does it have anything to do with chickens?
Of course.
Then yeah. Let me take a minute to tell you about the Chicken Love Box. If you love goodies for your chickens and you need to go to chickenlove.com.
I love the Mega Box. Tons of useful products for my flock and a chicken tea for me.
You can't go wrong with a chicken tea. They are so cute and so soft.
In the August box, I absolutely love those amazingly good smelling nest box herbs and that giant roll of rooster stickers.
They're great. I love the wood decorative plate. It's going up in our studio today. And with all my baking, those egg separators are going to work awesomely.
Boxes start at $39 a month. They ship immediately after your order, and shipping is always free.
Such a great deal. Don't wait. Get off the nest and click already. Use the code CWTCL50 for 50% off your first box of a 3-month subscription or more. That's chickenlove.com. That's chickenluv.com. Get your subscription today.
Have you heard of Strong Animals Chicken Essentials? They make natural supplements for your flock.
Strong Animals has used plant-based products and natural approaches to promote the health and vitality of backyard flocks. Their products contain organic essential oils, prebiotics, and other natural ingredients to support the immune system and digestive health. Give your chicks and chickens what they need to thrive with Strong Animals health products. Visit GetStrongAnimals.com today.
The Breed Spotlight is brought to you by Murray McMurray Hatchery, defining quality for generations. For over a century, Murray McMurray Hatchery has remained a trusted family-owned business, working tirelessly to ensure our poultry meet the highest standards.
Whether you are an experienced enthusiast or just embarking on the journey, look to McMurray Hatchery for guaranteed quality, rare and heritage breeds, low minimums, and all the supplies you need to raise your flock. Request a free catalog today.
Bum, 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 ba-dum, 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 bum, bum. Sailing across the seas, it's time for the Breed Spotlight, yeah.
Yeah. Who's sailing?
The Pilgrims. This is our Thanksgiving episode. So, today's Breed Spotlight is...
the Slate Turkey.
We're switching it up, everybody, because it's Thanksgiving week. Oh, it's one of my favorite weeks. I love Thanksgiving, probably more than Christmas.
Sometimes. I love Thanksgiving, too, and I love turkeys as well.
You do love turkeys. I love Thanksgiving because it brings family together without the pressure of gifts and giving and everything else, just for a really beautiful meal. I love that.
I just like it because it's like a feast, you know? It's a feast.
We get to eat, man.
You get to be...
after you're starved for 2.5 hours driving through Ohio, that feast looks good.
That was the best Qdoba ever. Ever. No, Thanksgiving is wonderful. You know, you get to stop and take stock of the year and all the million and one things you're grateful for. And I kind of look at it as like an end of the year harvest feast. I really like that.
Oh, yeah. I love the Thanksgiving food. It's so good. And it takes like a week to make, but then we eat it for a week.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
So you cook for a week, you eat for a week, it all evens out, and it's all great, great stuff.
And
so,
you know, and you get to do it your way. If you're doing Friendsgiving, great. If you're doing it solo, great. You get to do it your way.
I did it my way. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's talk about the Slate Turkey. That is our Breed Spotlight.
The Slate Turkey is a beautiful heritage breed, sometimes called the Blue, Blue Slate, or Lavender. This turkey is a medium-bodied bird with gorgeous color and a calm personality.
Definitely a calm personality. Mm-hmm. We can kind of, you know,
yeah, we'll
say
tell you
that
about
for
it.
Sure. Yeah. We're going to tell you about it later.
They were relatively popular on late 1800s farms, and the Slate was included in the first printing of the American Poultry Association Standard of Perfection in 1874. Do you know what else happened in 1874?
Yes, I do. The manure spreader was developed. Don't try to quiz me here. I heard him say that. You try to like, oh, she's going to forget.
No, I knew you would know it. They are a rare breed, and they are currently located in the watch category of the Livestock Conservancy's conservation priority list.
Yes, they are.
Now, turkeys are one of the few species of livestock that were native to the Americas. They were most likely domesticated a couple of thousand years ago by native people in what is now Mexico.
Yes.
Turkeys migrated from Mexico up into the U.S., and there may be some archaeological evidence of another area of turkey domestication in the southeastern U.S.
That's interesting.
There was another indigenous turkey that prehistorically was found on the west coast of America. It was called the California turkey, and it was hunted to extinction.
Oh,
in ancient times, so a long time ago.
I mean, people loved their turkey even back then.
The rest of the domestic turkey's origin stories is a little bit of a muddle. There have definitely been wild turkeys in the U.S. for hundreds or probably even thousands of years.
Yeah.
Now, during the 1500s, Spanish explorers that came to the, quote, New World definitely took turkeys back to Europe with them.
I like the switch up there. Instead of bringing them, they're taking them back.
They took them back. The first turkeys in England are supposed to have been imported by a man named William Strickland. He was a sailor and a wealthy trader, and he was supposed to have brought them back to England in the 1520s.
That's far back, man.
Yes. William Shakespeare wrote about eating turkey, and by the late 1500s, turkeys had become fairly popular with the British. By the mid-1600s, the new settlements in the U.S.
were including wild turkeys in their diets.
Right. It makes sense.
Now, here's where it gets confusing. There are a lot of anecdotes claiming that the British brought domesticated turkeys back to the U.S. Now, this is probable.
Okay, so you're saying, wait a minute, let's stop here. The turkeys were here. They came over, they took the turkeys, and then when they came back, they brought the turkeys.
Yeah, that's what I've read that in a lot of sources.
So here's a big question. Were there turkeys on the Mayflower?
The question is, it is probable that they brought some turkeys back, but the question is when, and I've seen a ton of sources that claim it was on the Mayflower.
Right.
This is highly unlikely. Please listen to episode 51, where we explain that there was next to no livestock on the Mayflower. Turkeys may have been brought to Jamestown, Virginia. But it's unlikely that any would have survived that first group of settlers.
Right.
I mean, the original supplies for Jamestown, all those animals, they went quickly.
Yeah.
The most logical story would be that turkeys were brought back to the Americas by later supply ships coming to the various colonies.
Probably with some chickens.
Chickens, sheep,
right.
Turkeys,
when
cattle.
All the animals came back over. We talked about exactly. All this, like you said in the other episode.
And from there, domestic turkeys flourished on American farms, often in the care of women, like the rest of the poultry. Martha Washington kept and bred turkeys. And according to Christine Heinrich's book, The History of the American Poultry Association, 150 Years, many of the best and most prominent turkey breeders of the late 19th and early 20th century were women.
Kudos to women.
That's right. We love our turkeys.
These slate turkeys, we saw them in person this weekend. So They're not a gigantic breed. They're not huge. When you see them, they're going to remind you more of like the super big chicken breed.
Kind of. They're a mid-sized turkey, but it would be a giant chicken, right?
But I mean, the toms are much bigger. So they're going to range from 23 to 33 pounds, but they don't even look that big
to me. Well, that's breed standard. I mean, that's what you might see with a show turkey. But not necessarily the average bred
right.
turkey on a farm.
And the hens are going to run about 14 to 18 pounds. Mm-hmm. And their color is a result of genetic mutations. Okay. But their offspring can be, let's list these colors, black,
blue,
white,
or splash.
Okay. So they can be a variety of colors.
That's really similar to the Andalusian chickens.
Yes.
Where the color is a genetic mutation, but you still get that color breakdown when you breed. It's just... If you take a black turkey and a white turkey and you breed them, that's not a slate turkey. A slate turkey is genetically distinct.
Exactly. So the toms have a coarse black beard on the top of their chest with a long snood and wattles.
It's very cute.
I like saying snood.
Snood. It's cute.
And their heads can change from red to blue skin. They're really cool looking.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're like the equivalent of the lavender Orpington. They're lavender, too. They kind of have that same kind of color.
Yeah, they do. Now, if we go back to the body size for a minute, you know, we saw the turkeys on Slate Run Farm, but at the 100...
They were bigger.
At the Ohio Nationals, there was one slate, and it was a large tom.
It was very large.
It was. That was a very large tom.
Most of the turkeys there were beyond large.
They would be breed standard, yeah.
And the turkeys at Slate Farm were probably half the size of that big tom.
Yeah, probably.
Probably about 15 pounds, if that, maybe, that those toms. They weren't as big.
You know, I'm trying to think of... I mean, they were a fraction... I honestly would guess 2/3 of the size of that tom, but it was definitely a fraction of the size of that show tom. Yeah.
Now, they have dark brown eyes and pink legs and feet. They're super cute.
They are very cute birds.
Slate hens are fairly average layers, according to turkey standards.
Mm-hmm.
They're average. They'll lay enough eggs to form a clutch, about a dozen or so. And then she'll probably go broody. There's an interesting story that we had from Dave over at the farm.
Yeah.
So if you've never seen turkey eggs before, they are big, light brown or cream colored eggs with lots of dark brown speckles.
They're very pretty eggs.
They're pretty. They're beautiful, really cool eggs.
When some of the sources that I was looking at from long ago, you know, early 20th, late 19th century, a lot of them were saying the turkeys would lay like up to 40 eggs in a year. So I guess that's a possibility for some breeds. And maybe modern turkeys aren't laying as many as they once did.
I mean, you're going to have a turkey for a pet and then you're going to use the eggs for either breeding to get more turkeys or just as beautiful eggs or to eat occasionally.
Exactly.
Very rarely. They're not your chickens egg laying.
Yeah, they're not going to supply you with daily eggs like chickens or ducks will.
But those eggs are beautiful.
They're gorgeous.
They are really, really, really beautiful.
This is a great breed if you're looking for a smaller turkey.
They are definitely smaller.
They're great homestead breeds, primarily used as table birds.
Mm, don't
but,
hear it.
Well, It's better that than factory farm turkeys.
Yeah.
But their calm personality can make them really good pets as well. I mean, I would want them as pets. Toms are spurred, just like roosters, and they can occasionally become assertive if they think their hens are in danger. But I have to say, those slates were really, really mild-mannered.
They let us in.
Mm-hmm.
So we were able to go in with the slate turkeys in their pen at Slate Run Farm with Dave.
Mm-hmm.
And there were two toms and all the hens and guinea hens in there.
Yes.
Guinea fowl. And we were standing there. Now, they were more into him
yes,
than us.
They were
not threatened by us.
No, they were keeping a close eye on Dave there. They're like, what are you going to do?
we're going to put the video up of you interviewing Dave that shows them really moving close to him.
Well, we came back.
But they never went after him.
No, they never went after him. And we came back afterwards, just you and I,
yeah.
Some filming. They never even made anything other than a soft little cooing sound. They were very, very tame.
And all their feathers were, like, their big tail feathers were down.
They didn't display, right.
They didn't display. Mm-mm. So, you know, and the hens, they weren't aggressive towards us.
The hens didn't care what we were doing. The hens went and took a nap.
Yeah. I mean, they were very calm and docile.
They're really beautiful birds. Now, that ideal slate coloring can apparently be tricky to breed. So, while they can be show turkeys, it is hard to get this breed to, quote-unquote, perfection.
Yeah.
Turkey poults can also be a little bit fragile in general, and need some TLC to get them growing well and thriving. Apparently, you get them past like a couple of weeks and they usually do pretty well.
Yeah.
Where do you get slate turkeys?
Our favorite hatchery, of course.
Murray McMurray Hatchery does carry slate turkeys.
So fantastic. If you want to try your hand at turkeys and, you know, great healthy stock,
mm-hmm.
go over to McMurray Hatchery.
I really think that these would be great pets if you're looking for just pet poultry.
Pet turkey, they seemed really calm.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those turkeys had never met us before in their lives.
I know.
And they did nothing.
Nope.
Now, I don't know how I would have felt going in with the chickens there, but the turkeys
right.
with the
they
boys.
Had a lot of roosters. They had a lot of roosters. Yeah. I mean, slate turkeys are available if you look around. But again, they're on the watch list. So, you know, they are definitely a rare breed. But Murray McMurray has some really pretty lines.
Now, this brings me to, if you have slate turkeys and you want to share some pictures with us, mention us in your story on Instagram or Facebook, and we'll reshare them. We would love to see them. We love seeing your pictures, so send them over. It was a fun breed spotlight.
It was kind of a revelation to me that turkeys came in such beautiful colors.
They are beautiful.
You know, you think of them in whites and blacks and browns, but I did not think about them in the slate or lavender.
Anything slate and lavender, as it's like a step up
mm-hmm.
in color.
Beautiful. If you're looking for a chicken coop that's produced in a planet-friendly, sustainable way, try Nestera.
Each coop is made from highly durable, 100% recycled plastic that keeps the equivalent of up to 2,000 shampoo bottles out of a landfill.
Their clean, modern design will fit into any garden or run area and comes with an industry-beating 25-year warranty and a range of handy accessories.
Simple to put together, so quick and easy to clean, and most importantly, red mite resistant. Your chickens will love it.
Quick shipping from Nestera.us.
For a 5% discount, use the affiliate link in our show notes, on our website, and on Instagram. Link in bio. Check them out today. Roosties proudly sponsors Coffee with the Chicken Ladies. They're back with an innovative new product. You're going to want to check this out.
It's an extra large set, a 14-pound feeder and 3-gallon water with steep anti-roost lids. They're made of super durable material. You can either stand them on legs or hang them on brackets on your coop or fence. They're easy to remove and clean, too. Plus, they look awesome.
We personally use Roosties, and we're huge fans. So if you're raising chicks or keeping chickens, check out the Roostie store on Amazon or follow the link in our show notes. Okay, so are we ready to move on to main topic? Yeah. This week's main topic, again, it's Thanksgiving week. It's Tuesday of Thanksgiving week, and everybody's pumped about Thanksgiving, so we want to carry that on. Now, last weekend, we visited Slate Run Living History Farm in Ohio. I love this place. I fell in love. If you were within an hour or two.
Oh, yeah. It's worth a visit.
Please go visit.
I knew you would love it.
Take your children there.
It was definitely one of the highlights of our visit to Ohio. This site is one of the metro parks of Columbus and Franklin counties in central Ohio.
Right.
The parks are entirely funded by tax levy, and they're free for the public to visit. And what a treasure the state of Ohio has in this farm.
Okay, so this farm, first of all, describing it, you're coming into a state park and then you kind of come around and there's hiking trails and everything else there if you like to hike. But you turn into this where you're going to park and there's like a little covered bridge that you walk through to walk up to the farmhouse. Such a quaint little walk. And the farmhouse and everything right there, it's run as if you walk back into 1880.
Right. The farm is set up and run entirely as a farm would have been in 1880s Ohio.
You walk through and you're in 1880.
The employees of the farm dress in period attire.
Yeah.
They do all of the manual labor themselves, along with a small group of volunteers. There is a farmhouse and several outbuildings and a surprisingly wide variety of heritage breed poultry and livestock.
And every farm animal you can think of.
So along with the slate turkeys, the farm also hosts...
Let's list this because it's quite long. Okay, so black Minorca.
Buckeye chickens.
Guinea hens.
Muscovy ducks.
Toulouse geese.
Shorthorn cattle.
Percheron horses.
Poland China pigs.
And Merino sheep.
We were astounded by the number of heritage breeds they had on this place.
It was crazy.
Yeah, it was.
And that's not to mention the gardening that they've done.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So they had a huge kitchen garden. One of my favorite parts is the house is just working as if it were 1880.
Right.
So you walk into the house and the kitchen is running. The wood stove is going.
Right.
The staff and the volunteers eat one meal a day there every day.
Right.
So they live off of, they kind of show you what kind of a day would be like. And when we walked in and that stove was running with the wood was burning and they had what was out, what they were cooking what they had preserved and everything else, I was truly amazed.
It was amazing. Dave Trotter is one of the farmers and Dave took a couple of hours out of his very busy day to take us all over the farm and answer our many questions.
We had lots of them.
We did. Endless questions. We started off by going through the house and it's a simple white Victorian with some pretty trim on the front of the house. We have photos of it up on our socials.
We're going to have everything, videos, socials. We're going to have it on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube.
Right.
Because we took so much video that we wanted to show you guys.
While we were visiting the kitchen, we asked what Thanksgiving would have looked like on an 1880s farm. Before we get to that, we're going to give you just a tiny bit of context about Thanksgiving right in this time period.
Yeah.
While various presidents from George Washington to Abraham Lincoln to Grover Cleveland declared Thanksgiving as a national holiday, it didn't really start to catch on until after 1900.
Right.
And finally, in 1941, Congress set a fixed date, keeping Thanksgiving on the last Thursday of November. And I would say probably in all the various sources I've seen, it started to really become popular in 1920. And from there, just, you know, snowballed through the 20th century. But back to the 1800s, the family-owned slate-run farm probably wouldn't have celebrated the holiday with a feast the way we do now.
Right.
The farming, the housework, and the animal care had to be done Thanksgiving or not.
Right. So we learned about basically on the farm in the 1800s, the big, large meal of the day, there was a breakfast, but it was small, was the midday meal, and it was called dinner.
Right.
So there was no lunch. It was dinner midday.
And it was the biggest meal of the day.
And it was a huge meal. Now, what we would classify as dinner, they talk, and this is where the difference comes in, they classify it as supper.
Mm-hmm.
And supper was the leftovers from dinner.
Right.
And it was a smaller amount. But they had to fit that in between working. When you live on a farm, the work does not stop.
It does not until
your
the sun goes
down. Your animals need to be fed. Mm-hmm. Your gardens need to be tended. You know, everything needs to be done. So that didn't stop. There was a lot of favorite things there. Mm-hmm. But I loved the fact, okay, so they didn't have electricity yet at this point.
Right.
They used oil lamps. And I actually love oil lamps.
Mm-hmm.
And the sconces to hold the oil lamps and the chandeliers to hold the oil lamps blew my mind.
The period stuff in the house was really amazing.
It was so cool.
I love the Victorian wallpaper. And I had this embarrassing moment. It was actually funny because I do a lot more colonial history. We're standing there in the kitchen with the kitchen staff. One of them's Donna. We'll talk to Donna again in the future.
Right.
But they were cleaning up after dinner. And the cook stove is just amazing.
It was wait till you see this.
Infatuated with this cook stove. And so being a colonial historian, I was like, well, what do you do at night? Do you just bank the fire and try to keep it? And she looked up at me and said, by 1880, we have matches.
Exactly. She's like, matches are out there.
Manure spreaders and matches.
Manure spreaders and matches. I mean, so you don't think about it because we do talk about colonial times a lot more on this show than we would talk about just about later. The other thing that was interesting was there was a fireplace, and Dave told us that that probably wasn't even used then.
Right.
So they had, you know, the wood stoves at that point.
They would attach the stove to,
Exactly. So we were starting to see in the late 1800s a little bit more modernism,
if
you want to call it that, come into play in this farmhouse. And, you know, he was telling us about it was very tough to farm on the land there because it's so hilly.
Right. And so this
was in a ravine.
A lot of it was in a ravine. It was very rolling. It's heavy clay soil. And so this farmer went to sheep. He was raising Merino sheep, which was sheep. This is like a whole giant political thing in the 1800s, but sheep breeding became, what's the word I want? There was all this myth started by the cattle ranchers that sheep tore up pasture. They pulled the grass up by the roots. Sheep were horrible. They called them range maggots.
Right.
There was even a lot of cases of violence, especially in the West. So choosing to farm sheep was unusual. It was smart because his farm is perfect for it. And also, interestingly enough, literally right down the road, there was a wool market.
It's still there.
It's still there. The building is still there.
It was really cool to see. The other thing that you asked about was they didn't knit for to have to wear their stuff. They were knitting for fun
also,
or a hobby.
Much different than colonial America, where you were shearing and spinning and weaving.
Right.
Enslaved people would have been doing some of that. You would have hired tailors, dressmakers, etc. But no, when they did their wool clip, they sent it out to the wool market. They bought fabric to sew with.
Right.
Now, we did see two really amazing Iron Lady Singer sewing machines there.
Oh, yeah. They were cool.
The treadle-powered sewing machines.
Now, here's the other cool thing. Their water pump is still a working water pump on that farm. Mm-hmm. They do not have running water there.
Nope.
And the kids were all playing, like, to pump the trying to pump the water. And actually, they were washing their hands and pumping the water. You felt like, for a few hours, you step back in the 1800s there.
We've been to a lot of historical sites, but this one was so good.
It was. And I felt like the people that work there care.
Yeah.
And I felt like they wanted to teach the history of the 1800s. Mm-hmm. Plus, they really, you know, had a bond with farming there and the animals there. And
right.
After seeing all the animals, I felt like they really took excellent care of the animals.
Oh, I agree. I agree. I mean, and they obviously have some there that have grown into old age.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to know what kind of a caretaker someone is of an animal, find out if they have any old animals.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, it was really a fun afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't wait for everyone to see the videos that we took and kind of enjoy the day with us. It was such a nice day. And Dave, he is an amazing guy. He was so much fun.
He had this fantastic dry sense of humor that I loved.
My favorite thing is we walk up and he says, "Well, yeah, I saw you guys arrive. I figured that was you." And we
I'm
were
not
thinking,
sure what that means.
What does that mean?
We looked like we didn't belong.
He was so funny.
He was very funny. I also thought it was really interesting. I mean, I do know a lot more about cooking in colonial America. But, you know, even in the 1800s, if they were going to do a feast, it was going to be seasonal things. That's what they had to cook with.
Everything was seasonal.
Mm-hmm.
That canning cellar. Wow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That was amazing. We're going to have video up on our
socials. That was a root cellar. And there were sweet potatoes in there that were like, I don't even know. What were they the size of? A baby.
Yeah. They were in the kitchen.
They were in the kitchen. Okay.
And in there, it was just a huge wall of everything preserved from the garden.
Yeah.
Green beans, pickled beets, so many different things.
Mm-hmm.
Apples, pears. The other thing that you were really excited about is they had orchards there, where they had 14 varieties of heirloom apples.
Heirloom apples.
Mm. We know Holly Ann loves her heirloom apples.
I love me some apples.
So
there was, I knew a lot of the varieties they were growing, like Duchess of Oldenburg and some of the others. There were a couple, like there were some russets and some greenings. Those are like, go back to colonial times. But there were a few that I didn't know.
Yeah.
And it was a really pretty orchard.
It was really pretty.
Yeah.
That whole place, there was a pond in there, a river.
The Toulouse geese and the Muscovies were on the pond.
Yeah. And the barn was the original barn, but with some rebuilding.
Yeah.
From the 1880s. And it was just a really nice, nice afternoon.
It was fascinating. I mean, I wish every state had a place like that.
Yeah, definitely. And they do maple syrup there too.
Yeah, they tap maple trees.
Mm-hmm. They do everything. And Dave had so many interesting things to say. So
many funny things. And some of these heritage breeds, Poland China pigs, I've never heard of.
No.
Never heard of them before. And they were really neat to see. I don't know if our video of them is going to turn out because the sun was so bright.
Oh, I took many videos on my cell phone.
Okay, good.
So
what the video camera couldn't capture, your phone did good.
Yeah, so exactly. We had two video cameras going. So we will put out everything that we saw. And
yeah,
we hope you guys love this farm as much as us. Like we said, if you're within an hour or two mm-hmm. of just outside of Columbus and you haven't gone to Slate Run,
get yourself there.
Go to this farm and take your kids there for, they do demonstrations on the weekends, everything.
They do some programs. When we left, there were two little kids trying to saw wood with a two-handled saw.
Yeah. And it's just a fun place to go sit and relax.
See those animals.
And see the animals. So we're going to try to get you some of the interview that we had with Dave.
Yeah, we're going to leave you with some of the audio that we had with Dave. It was really, really fun conversations.
To see it all, mm-hmm. we're going to put the entire thing in its entirety up on our YouTube channel. So head over there to see the entire video
right.
and hear everything that Dave had to say. He is such a nice man, so caring to these animals, and loves this farm. So check it out on YouTube. And
a gigantic thank you to
Dave
and the staff of Slate Run Farm.
And he knew it was us right away.
He did.
He's like, those crazy chicken ladies, or that's got to be those crazy chicken ladies.
Can't hide it.
Okay, so we're here at Slate Run Farm. This is David Trotter and Chrissy, of course.
Hey, everybody meet Dave. He's amazing.
Dave's going to tell us about, do you prefer Dave or David?
I prefer Dave. I've been called worse.
See, I said Dave first. I knew it. Yeah.
So Dave is going to tell us a little bit about the farm.
Yeah. So Slate Run Living Historical Farm has been here just over 40 years as a historical farm. The house itself that's behind you, it was built in 1856. The barn that you see in our background was built in 1881.
Wow.
Our goal is to present a family farm in central Ohio in the 1880s.
You know what we didn't ask, which I do want to ask?
Go ahead.
Tell us the breeds of chickens you have over there.
The breeds of chickens we have over there are Black Spanish Minorcas.
And I thought they were Minorcas.
And Buckeyes.
That's what we said.
Yes, yep. We got the breeds right.
We got the breeds right.
Go us.
We've tried a number of different breeds back and forth.
So if you're fine, let's go into the house and talk a little bit about what Thanksgiving might have looked like.
Go into the kitchen first.
Perfect. Is this a summer kitchen over here? Or what
that is a summer kitchen over that? There.
Bells are for staff use only.
No.
Yes.
I bet you needed that sign.
Oh,
we
my God, it's adorable.
Okay, Chris is going to move out of the way so we can see this. Oh, gorgeous kitchen. Is that the original stove?
That is not the original stove. Okay. That's not even the stove that was here when I first started.
Oh my
here.
God, look at the chandelier up here.
Can we back up so it'll make anyone dizzy? Wow.
This is absolutely beautiful.
So, this is the kitchen. They're just getting dinner ready from the smells of it and looks of it.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure about
so that. Basically, this is the wash area here.
Yeah.
With the pans. Oh man, I'd cook in a little kitchen that looks like this today.
So the ladies will. We've got almost everything out of the garden this year,
mm-hmm.
But they will can and preserve it.
Okay.
It would have been the 1880s. From the looks of it here, we've got apple butter, apple sauce, pears, pickled beets, sauerkraut.
Pickles?
Bread and butter pickles.
And is that cider?
This is cider.
Nice.
So we've been pressing out our apples, and we've just finished our pressing here over last week, and so we still have a little cider to drink here.
Fantastic.
This is amazing. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
We've
got sweet potatoes curing under the stove.
The stove is absolutely gorgeous.
It is.
Oh, wow. Those sweet potatoes are massive.
Yeah.
Okay, now we got to get them.
Did you grow those here?
We grew those here.
Oh, wow.
Oh, they are massive.
They're underneath the
stove. Wowie wow.
Those are amazing.
Talk about just needing one. You can make free pies from one of those.
This hutch. That was here?
This was here.
Built-in hutch. It's really cool.
Okay, we're at Slate Run Farm. This is the turkey house. We're going to see the slate turkeys. And you have guineas over here as well?
Yes.
And guinea fowl would have been on an 1880s farm?
Yes, they would have been available. Guinea fowl tend to make a lot of noise when predators come around.
Yeah.
So if you think of guinea fowl as being the 1880s alarm system.
Okay. Perfect.
For predators, so
they get on the side,
you'd know what's going on. Or if there was somebody trying to get in now.
Okay.
Sweet peas.
Hey.
Hi.
So these two are kind of unique for us. We tried to incubate eggs in the spring and had zero success.
Okay.
But we left the hens alone in the back corner, and lo and behold, they hatched out too.
They went broody.
Yeah, they went broody and hatched out too.
That's amazing.
Hi.
There were probably a couple dozen eggs in there, but
you got two.
Nice. With the slate turkeys, is it the standard blue poultry genetics? Like you get white, you get blue, you get black?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I call it gray, black, and then there's like a gray with a black splash on it.
Splash, yeah.
They're gorgeous.
That's really pretty.
When we started with the slates, they were, I think, critical.
Yeah.
Or threatened with the Livestock Conservancy.
Right.
And I just looked it up today, and they're up to watch.
To watch list, yeah.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
We work closely with them also. Look at you.
Hey, beauties.
You're going to come out.
Oh, somebody's out over there. Hi, you.
Are you interested in my phone?
So how do you like the slate? So they are period appropriate, obviously.
Yes.
How do you like them, their personalities, etc.?
They're fine by me. You know, I probably haven't gotten to know them as much as you've gotten to know your chickens over the years.
Fair enough, yes.
They don't bother me too much, which is a big plus for poultry in my mind. Sometimes the toms on the other side get a little aggressive.
Do they?
I was just going to ask, is that the toms are over there?
Well, the toms and the older hens are over there.
Okay.
These are just the two that were hatched here.
Yeah. Just this
year. Hey, beauties.
So basically, even though they were hatched under a brood, they still have to go through a little bit of an integration process.
We pulled them out just because of when they hatched out and wanted to make sure they were going to get the temperatures they needed.
Okay.
And he's making a lot of noises that aren't the standard gobble that everyone hears. Is that his alarm call, like he's concerned for the hens? That's a hen.
She.
So no wonder there's...
Maybe she's concerned for the youngins. Here we go. Here's the boy.
Here's the Tom. Yes. I should have known that. Silly me.
So, look, everybody's coming out. Yeah. Oh, I love it.
So she may have been calling the boys out.
Okay.
There's the guineas.
Yeah.
Look at them.
Look at them.
It's so amazing.
The guineas can fly.
Right.
Okay. And I figured they'd jump the fence here in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Have some guinea action. Hi, beautiful.
Trying to get back in.
It's a game.
All this farm staff, do they like the slate turkeys for the most part, and why if they do?
I like the slate turkeys because of their historical accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the fact that we're preserving a critical breed.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're ready to move on to
cracking the eggs.
Cracking those eggs. Now, it's Tuesday before Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've got to have start this before.
Yeah, there was a different recipe that I wanted to do, and you were all about stuffing. And so...
Well, okay, ever since I mentioned stuffing a while back about Joe and Michelle's stuffing, that Joe's my husband, okay? Now, that re-fired up his competition for the stuffing. So I'm doing my normal stuffing, and I'm also going to do a new stuffing. There's going to be three stuffings at our Thanksgiving table.
I'm going to be doing two. I'll do my classic, and then I'm going to do the cornbread too.
Yeah, so I love stuffing. I am the person that eats the stuffing until it's gone.
If the only dish that were available at Thanksgiving is stuffing, I would be fine with that. But I should mention this. Stuffing goes into a bird. So technically speaking, what we're making is dressing.
We're making dressing.
And I think our parents called it that when we were kids, but we've thrown all that out the window. It's stuffing. Stuffing.
It's stuffing. I personally don't stuff the bird with the dressing.
I don't have a bird to stuff, so it makes it easier for me.
I do it separately and stuff the turkey with other things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's talk about this.
Cornbread stuffing,
a ridiculously delicious alternative to traditional bread stuffings. We made our version with sausage. Well, veggie sausage for me.
Yeah.
Diced roasted sweet potatoes and dried cranberries for some delicious tartness.
Oh, we're throwing it all in there. So, you know, my stuffing is normally done with pumpkin muffins mm-hmm. that I make like a week beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
Those have been made and are drying. And I've also made my cornbread.
Me too.
So I did a little something different. I just threw the cranberries in with the bread.
Yeah. And you came and told me that after I'd already written the stinking recipe.
But I'm also adding dry cranberries too.
You are really upping the cranberry quotient on this. A lot of cranberry happening.
I'm going to cut them in half. I cut them in half.
Yeah.
And then made two different kinds.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, cornbread.
You can make
it's been drying.
Make your own cornbread. You can use box mix if you want, though I think they're a little too sweet for this.
Yeah.
Or you can start with our recipe back in episode 81. It's linked in the show notes. You will need one egg for the cornbread.
Yes, I love cornbread.
Make and bake the cornbread and let it cool. And once it is completely cool, cut it into cubes and let them sit out and become stale.
Everything that you make for stuffing has to dry out.
Mm-hmm, right,
You don't want it too moist because if it's too moist, it will become sticky.
So in a pinch, you can put it on a cookie sheet and dry it out in a 400 degree Fahrenheit
right.
oven.
Make your
Check
own cubes.
Check on it like every 5 or 10 minutes until it's dry enough.
So if you're like, oh no,
what
you
do
can
I do?
Do this. You
can
just
do
have
this.
To bake them a little bit.
Right. Ingredients.
Let's list these lovely ingredients. So one recipe of the cornbread, which we just kind of talked about, cut, cube, dried, stale, 1 pound of sausage or veggie sausage of your any kind that you like, pork or turkey sausage mm-hmm. or veggie.
Yeah.
2 cups peeled sweet potatoes cut into small cubes, because keep in mind you're going to be putting this on your
right.
plate. 1 cup of chopped onion, 1 cup of finely chopped celery, 2 cloves of garlic, butter or dairy-free butter, 1/2 teaspoon of cinnamon, 1/2 cup dried cranberries, chopped a bit smaller and or fresh if you're going to bake it in the cornbread, 1/2 cup of fresh parsley chopped, 1 tablespoon of fresh sage chopped or 1 teaspoon dried, 1 tablespoon of fresh thyme leaves or 1 teaspoon dried, and 1/3 cup of chicken broth or veggie broth.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 beaten eggs. That is an optional if you want to put
the
that
two,
in there.
Exactly, the 2 beaten eggs, yeah.
So, I mean, most stuffings start with a mixture of garlic, onion, celery,
mm-hmm.
butter of some sort, and you cook all that together.
I put carrots in mine, but I was not going to put carrots in here with the sweet potatoes because
yeah.
why bother?
Yeah, exactly.
So you're going to preheat your oven to 350 and grease or butter a large casserole dish and set it aside. You want a big skillet. You're going to cook the sausage or veggie sausage until it's starting to brown. Remove it with a slotted spoon and place it on a paper towel lined plate to drain. Now, depending on your preferences, you can pour off some or all of the sausage fat and add butter.
Right.
Add your sweet potatoes, your onion, your celery, and cook on medium-low heat until the onions and sweet potatoes are beginning to soften. That's like 8 minutes or so.
It's going to take a while.
Yeah.
Because your sweet potatoes are going to take. And
right.
here's the thing. If you cut them smaller, they're going to cook quicker.
That's why you cut them small. Yeah.
Right.
Once they're cooked and softening, you're going to stir in the garlic and the cinnamon and cook for about 2 more minutes.
Right.
Then you're going to pour the contents of the skillet into a really big bowl.
Yep.
To that really big bowl full of stuff, you're going to add the sausage, the parsley, the thyme, the sage, and the cranberries. Toss it gently to evenly mix all the ingredients together. At this point, you either add enough of the broth, the chicken or veggie broth, to moisten the stuffing. But if you want it to be firmer, the way it would be if it came out of a turkey,
right.
you're going to pour the 2 beaten eggs over top and quickly toss to mix it in. You want it mixed in pretty well.
Yeah.
Pour it into a large casserole dish and bake it. If you want it crispy on top, leave it uncovered. Cover it for softer topping. You're going to bake it in a 350-degree oven for about 45 minutes. The stuffing should be heated through and starting to brown on the top when it's finished. Taste it to make sure the sweet potatoes have cooked all the way through. And if they have, you're golden. Serve your stuffing and enjoy it.
There's another really neat seasoning. Mm-hmm. It's maple, which to me would go really well. I have it in my seasoning. It's by McCormick's. It would go really well with the sausage and the sweet potato.
What is it?
It's like flaked, like maple kind of, like an apple maple
Interesting.
Kind of mix. Yeah, I'll have to show you. But that might be going in mine. a little bit. But, you know, this is another, like, do it like this. You can change up some of the seasoning. You could add rosemary. You could do whatever if you like those.
That's the joy of cooking, that you get to
make it your own a little bit.
Exactly.
So add it to your stuffing. I thought Thanksgiving isn't complete unless we do a stuffing recipe.
Oh,
there's so many great ones.
And we love stuffing so much.
Yeah.
Love stuffing so much. Did you know there's actually a chestnut stuffing?
Oh.
Yeah.
We saw the chestnuts in No.
No, those were Buckeyes.
Those are Buckeyes.
They look like chestnuts.
We've got to put that picture up on social. Yeah. That was really cool. The Buckeyes were, how much were they a piece? It was like,
I don't know,
10 cents a piece,
yeah,
or something.
Like
they
that.
Were cool. Okay, so try it. You might like it. Let us know what you think. Now, you're getting this Tuesday before, but this might be a good one to make if you run out of stuffing and you want to make another stuffing for leftovers.
Do a second stuffing.
Do another stuffing. Or do a stuffing on a weekend. You don't have to just be Thanksgiving. To me, stuffing, even through the holidays, you can do a stuffing.
Well, we go to Thanksgiving dinner at my sister's house, mm-hmm. and I usually do the mashed potatoes.
Oh, yeah. You've always done that.
And sometimes a dessert or something like that. But I also do a meal for Pete now the next day.
Yeah.
And so there's always a stuffing. I make a ton of mashed potatoes, so we have extras, and I make him mushroom gravy, stuff like that.
Now, you're really going to enjoy this Thanksgiving, because last Thanksgiving, you were so sick.
Oh, that's right. I had
COVID, flu, and pneumonia.
Yeah, that was good times.
And you got it like 2 days before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that was miserable.
So,
and then I got it. It was kind of coming back before Christmas.
Yeah, you were very sick, so you got to enjoy this Thanksgiving.
Good times, good times.
Okay, so are we ready to move on to retail therapy? Retail therapy.
Yeah.
This week's retail therapy, we are reviewing Roosty's new feeder and waterer set. They're great. There's going to be a video up. We put them mm-hmm. together. They're excellent. They're nice feeders.
Roosty's recently sent each of us a set of these newly designed feeders and waterers, which we are now reviewing.
They're great. I like them because you can use them and then you can put them together. And if you need to put them away, you know, they're plastic, nice plastic feeders. They're the ones where the chickens can put their heads in. They're
right.
good for times when you need the food to be protected. If it's raining, it's going to keep the food dry in there.
Right.
And they're really nice.
They're quick and easy to put together. We put them together very quickly.
Like in 5 minutes.
They can hold a good amount of feed.
Yeah.
They're appropriate for chickens of all sizes.
Yeah. You can even, I like them because I think that you could even put them in a pop-up if you had to.
Yeah, probably.
They're not oversized.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they're good that you can put them in. They're nice colors. They're white and orange.
Right. They have handles on the top of them.
They have handles mm-hmm. also. So they're on Amazon.
Yeah.
At the Roosty's range.
Mm-hmm.
Check them out. You might like them.
Yeah. We will have a link in the show notes.
Definitely.
Easy to clean. I mean, it's very easy cleaning plastic.
Very nice. Very, very nice. Okay. So should we tell everybody what we're going to be talking about next week?
Sure, we should. Next week, we're profiling a critically endangered heritage breed that you don't hear much about, the Holland chicken.
It's a new one.
Main topic, we're talking with Dr. Rebecca about the medical side of frostbite. This is really good information.
Yeah, you're going to want to listen.
Cracking the eggs. Thanksgiving leftover fried rice.
Fried rice uses eggs and all your leftovers.
There you go. Mine are not going to make it into the fried rice. Retail therapy, we are reviewing Grubly Farms' new Omega Mix.
It's good.
Chicken snacks. That is great stuff.
Okay, so what should we tell everybody to do until next week?
Hug your chickens.
Every day, and kiss them too. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
If you'd like to see more of us, please follow us on Instagram at Coffee with the Chicken Ladies. If you'd like to help us grow the podcast, please leave us a written review on Apple Podcasts. If you'd like to become a patron of the show, please visit our Patreon page, patreon.com/coffeewiththechickenladies. Thanks for listening.